views and opinions expressed on this podcast show are solely those of Everything's EHC's guests and hosts. These views and opinions do not necessarily represent those of the San Francisco Lighthouse for the Blind, Enchanted Hills Camp, or Maceo.net. Thank you for listening, and please enjoy the show.
All right, this is Maceo again, and we're talking with George Wurtzel. This is a part two, and we're going to get down to the Enchanted Hills Camp aspect of George Wurtzel. George, tell us, continuing your story, tell us how you ended up here at Enchanted Hills.
So, sometimes recruiters take on very unfair or slanted recruiting tactics to get the people that they want. And Brian Basham is no exception to that. He tries to take advantage and get the upper hand wherever he can. So Brian Basham calls me up one day when it is -6 degrees in Minneapolis, Minnesota, and 72 degrees in San Francisco. And he says, "Have you ever thought about living where it's warm?" Something very close to that,
anyway.
Oh,
yeah, sure.
So we started into a conversation about Enchanted Hills. Brian Basham and I had met in the past. Brian had done his due diligence. He knew who I was, what I was, what I had done. He knew about my experience with Camp Tushmahita back in Michigan. So we had done a lot of things that got a lot of people's attention there. Things that Camps for the Blind hadn't done in the past, being the biggest one being the huge amount of blind people that we hired to run programming there for blind people. So he asked me about, you know, if I was interested in coming to California and working for the Lighthouse at Enchanted Hills. And I said, "Well, bring me out, show me what you want to do, and let's talk about it." So Brian flies me out to San Francisco. I don't know if this was, you know, if it was planned or anything, but I magically end up at San Francisco at the main headquarters on the day that they happen to be having the big party for the purchase of the new building at 1155 Market Street. So it may have been planned on his part. I'm just guessing.
Gotcha.
You know? So I go in. The super shuttle drops me off at 1155 Market Street. I go up to the, you know, 9th or 10th floor, whatever floor they were having the big party on it. And it was still, the building was still completely intact from the previous tenants, which was the city offices that had been on those floors. So this was pre the remodel that is the fantastic place that it is today. So spent the evening there, met a huge amount of the board people, met a person that I'd wanted to meet for 4 or 5 years, who was Chris Downey, who is the blind architect who's on the board of directors for Enchanted Hills. For Lighthouse. And that was really exciting because I love architecture and I love design, and so it was exciting to meet a guy who had lost his vision and decided that his vision wasn't going to keep him from being the architect that he'd always been. And so that was my highlight of my coming to that particular building. So then the next day, Tony Fletcher and I hop in a car and come up here to Enchanted Hills. And he walks me around and talks to me and shows me everything.
What was your first impression?
I loved it because it's so much like my other camp. I mean, the other camp, Camp Tushmahita, Camp T, was 300 acres. This was 300 acres. This has a little more fancier buildings on it than we had. It has more structures and everything. Our camp was a little bit more, it was somewhere halfway between lower camp and the upper part of this camp.
Gotcha. So, a little bit of both.
A little bit of both.
Gotcha.
Yeah. So Brian Basham then and I start wandering around. We go up to what is the old grape crushing barn where the wood shop is now, and we go in there and we have to kick and wade our way through the building. It's has 40 years of trash and debris that no one knew what to do with at the camp and just threw in the building. There are no doors on the front of the building.
It was rough. I'd been in there a few times.
There was a dirt floor on the main floor. It was still dirt from the original when they built the original building. The second floor of the building had a set of stairs that, calling them stairs, was very generous. It's more closely related to a ladder than it was stairs.
Yes.
Very steep, very narrow, no railings.
Sketchy, yeah.
Yep. And then where you went off out of the back of the building onto the grade level for the second story, out of onto the high part of the embankment up there, the entranceway, it had all rotted out. There was big holes in where you walked across. Someone had thrown a couple planks across it. And I remember very distinctly just walking across on the planks. And I remember Brian Besham kind of hanging back. And I think Brian said to himself, well, he can walk across it. I can too. So Brian walked across it. But he wasn't very excited about when he could just poke his cane right straight through the floor he's walking on. He got a little nervous. But so it's funny because a lot of people would take a look at that building and say, oh, my God, let's just burn it down.
Yeah, no, let's just demolish it, start over.
And I took a look at it, and I says, you know, this is a building. I didn't know at that point in time how old it was. I do now because we found where someone had written on one of the beams, you know, built in 1922. I looked at it and I said, you know, it's got pretty good bones. You know, it's been here for, you know, getting close to 90 some years. The floor on the second floor relatively level and flat. The roof is good. Doesn't appear to be a lot of rot in any of the columns or posts that hold it up. The building's still square. It's definitely, we can make something out of this. So then Brian and I went into the dream stage as to what I envisioned, what he envisioned. So we sat down and we started talking about potential, and we started talking about what we wanted to accomplish with it. We started talking about how we would interact with the lighthouse people that come to the camp. How would we interact with adults? What would we do with, you know, kids program for the regular summer programming? So we started, we talked about all of those elements. And so we come to an agreement. He brings me out here. I start working on the building. Pour concrete floor, redo the second floor, rewire the building. It had a 30-amp electrical service when I moved into the building, which was enough to run, you know, two outlets and six light bulbs, and that's it. We put a 400-amp electrical service in it. I brought all my tools and equipment and machinery that from my woodworking operation that I'd, you know, had over the last years, what was left of downsizing it. Got it here, got it set up, got a lot of input, a lot of help from the first two AmeriCorps groups that came here. Very, very instrumental in remodeling the building. They were the labor. And there's a good example of what my skill and talent is. Give me people who have absolutely no idea what they're doing, and I will direct them, and we will come up with a good finished product. And that is one of the things that I truly do excel at as far as my people skills go. The ability to, you know, take people and walk them through a process. I jokingly tell people all the time, I says, with my brains and your hands, we can build almost anything if you'll just listen to my instructions.
That's
awesome. And I have got some people to build some pretty amazing things over my lifetime with their hands and just listening to my instructions. And
right.
Because you're working off of your work. You don't have to think about how you're going to do the joint. You don't have to think about what joint you need to use. You don't have to think about, you know, what tool to use. I line all that stuff up for you. So you just walk through the process. You pick up the piece of wood, you run it across the machine, and when you're done, we end up with a beautiful finished product. And that's how we ended up with the barn being done with AmeriCorps people. You walk through the process. Just here again, it's breaking things down to those little teeny tiny baby steps, little tiny bites, just like eating the elephant. You know, you start off with a little fork and a little knife, and you start whittling away as it is toenails. You know, and pretty soon you've come to the end of the trunk.
That's it.
And the summer programs, which are truly just starting to come into their own, working with kids, I always start all newbies in my woodworking projects. I try to start them off using all hand tools. so that you learn how to use your hands first and foremost. And you also learn how wood works, what it feels like, how it comes apart, how it makes sense. All of those elements. So we've done a lot of stuff. We started off, you know, when the building was just barely usable, started off with kids up there doing one of my favorite projects, which is making wooden spoons. There's a lot of, we could talk for the next 2 hours on all of the lore in the world about spoons and why people make spoons and what their significance are in different cultures and everything. That we could spend a whole day just talking about that. There's a lot of history in just spoons. The spoons.
Right. Seen a lot of spoons come off of this camp since I've been here.
Yep.
Yeah.
And so our summer programs work, you know, with, you know, I work with some of the parents and blind babies. I work with the deafblind kids who come here. I've had some incredible experience working with some young deafblind students that I've had. One young lady, really super strong artistic talents and skills. Very first time in my shop, learning how to do some sculpture and some carving, and she carved a hand which has the manual sign for love, and that was her very first wood project that she'd ever done. She was really excited about it, took it home with her, this summer when she came back, she brought it back and she gave it to me. I was just really, really moved by that.
It's a very cool piece too. Yeah.
And so the summer, work with all the programs that come through, work with the teenagers, work with the kids from the YES program, which is the transition kids programs out of Lighthouse. We've getting them to come up here now. When I had the YES kids up here this summer, there was 16 of the kids. We broke them up into three groups of five, and then we had to chop the one kid up. It was really sad, into three pieces, because we wanted even amounts of people.
Yeah,
in every
exactly.
group. But what we build a project in what I like to call factory style. So group one took the boards from their rough state, ran them through a planer, straight lined them on a joiner, ran them across the table saw, and rough cut them to lengths. Group two then came in after them, did the fine machining and the fine cutting, and got them all ready to go. Group three came in, did the final assembly and a little bit more decorative machining on them. And when we were done, we had this really nice little wooden box that everybody took home with them. And we built, 20, 25 of them or something like that. So we built more than there was people for. But everybody got to do a nice piece of the project. And the nice thing I like about doing little factory projects is if you walk up to something, a saw, and you just make one cut, your terror is higher than the value of doing the process.
Yes.
If you walk up and you make one cut, and then you make a second cut, and then you make 8 or 10 or 12, pretty soon you're starting to learn what you're doing instead of being terrorized of the process. And that's what I really like about doing little factory projects.
That's a very good point.
When we ran the science camp this summer with Hobie Wedler and Jamie Gump, some of Jamie's kids, and Josh Mealy from Smith Kettlewell, we took the kids up to the camp and we made little wooden boxes, factory style again, then that they brought down to the Kiva and put out an Arduino project inside of the box, and then they programmed the Arduinos, you know, to do whatever the task was that that they wanted to do. So that incorporated all of it into one project.
All of the elements together. Yeah, very cool. We had Dr. Josh talking on a podcast about the Arduino, I can't even say it, stuff.
Yeah.
And you tied it together there nicely by how that whole process works during the steamle.
So then you get into the non-summer camp part of what I do.
Yeah, that was going to be the next part here. What actually happens now is you are having your, weekend wood camps? Is that what happens?
Yep, and the woodworking part of the shop building is completely done. It's up and running. The only thing that it lacks is finish off finishing off the end of the dust collection to go to all the machines. Instead of having to drag a hose around from machine to machine, we're going to now get hoses to go to all the machines individually. Then that is completely done. The next stage for that building is now the pottery studio downstairs on the main floor will be the very next thing. The sculpture area on the main floor will get done at the same time that the pottery studio gets done, because they actually share some of the same floor space. And then the next project after those two are done, we'll put a small leather working shop back in the back corner. So out of the building, we're going to run woodworking, you know, pottery slash ceramics, sculpture, a little bit of leather work. The other corner of the building I'm really excited about, we're just finishing it up right now, is going to be a gallery for people to display their work and sell their work out of. I, as part of my agreement with Brian and Lighthouse, is that I get to use that gallery space to show and sell my art out of.
Is that, will that be something we can, Enchanted Hills can advertise as?
Absolutely.
Because you've been in other art, yes, art galleries before. We could say, you know, advertise it as, you know, as an experienced art gallery person has their own art gallery up here. And as I was looking in the Napa area, there are a lot of art galleries around here. People, I would imagine, come here just to see the art in this area. Yeah. Drink wine and look at art.
There is a, huge, beautiful gallery, probably with, you know, I'm going to guess somewhere between $5 and $10 million worth of art at Hess Gallery just down, or Hess Vineyards just down the hill from us, 4 miles away.
Right.
There are tons of artists and artisans all over. Every little town around all have art galleries in them.
Yeah.
There is a really nice wine and art book tour book that you can buy at the Chamber of Commerce that we will take out an ad in, so that our gallery here becomes a part of that.
Part of.
We have 5 or 6 major blind artists going to be here this very coming weekend for our very first tactile art symposium that's ever been held here at the camp. It's the third one in a series of 3. The first symposium was in Baltimore at the that NFB put together. The second one was in Colorado that Ann Cunningham was the, you know, person who put it all together. The third one is here, hosted by Enchanted Hills and Lighthouse for the Blind. So we're extremely excited about that.
Super cool. Yes.
As
very,
part
very
of,
cool.
As part of this non-summer camp season, one of the things that we're going to work towards is we're going to work towards having artists and residents who will work here. They'll come here for, my goal is to get people here for 6 months to a year who will give them an artist in residency. Their mission will be to do their thing, whatever it is, if it's ceramic slash pottery, if it's sculpture, if it's leatherworking, if it's woodworking. We'll supply them a place to live and we will feed them, and their obligation to us will be that they will then run seminars to teach other blind people and even sighted people. I mean, sighted people really are teachable. whatever, you know, their skill or craft happens to be. So that has got me really excited, because I really want to make that happen.
That sounds very cool, actually.
The off-season woodworking things that we have done so far, we've 7 or 8 classes that we've run. We've also run 3 separate sessions for organizations called WW4B, which is Woodworkers for the Blind. It's an international organization. There are people in Mexico and Canada who have come here now, in the United States, who've come here to participate. We ran the first one a year ago, which was a mixed bag of people from all over and different skills level. This year, we got a little smarter. We ran an advanced session for more seasoned, more knowledgeable woodworkers, and then we ran a beginner's session. And the seasoned session, there are some incredibly talented blind woodworkers that come to this. There's guys who are making a very good living off of their woodworking. There are guys here that teach woodworking for a living who are totally blind and who are being very successful at it. So that was fun. But the beginner class was really interesting. There was 6 people in that class, in the beginner class. 3 of them were women, which I really like to see, because, you know, sometimes people, when you start looking at different things, they categorize people into different groups, and they don't necessarily equate women and woodworking in the same vein. My mother, during World War II, when there was no men around, to help my grandfather, who was in the construction business, my mother worked right side by side with my grandfather building houses. So my mother knew how to swing a hammer as good as any man ever did.
Yep.
So we run in the wintertime, we'll run 4-day programs. People will come in on a Thursday afternoon. We'll spend Thursday evening getting together, figuring out what we want to do. Friday morning, we'll get up bright and early and we'll start hammering away at it, so to speak.
Yes.
And we'll build projects. Sometimes we build projects that are of whatever anybody wants to do. They talk to me ahead of time. I try to decide if they have the skill and talent to do them. And then I decide if we can get them done in the time frame allowed.
That's allowed, yeah.
And sometimes we work right down to the very, 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 very last minute before, you know, the bus is ready to drive out the driveway and they're getting on and the varnish is still wet. So
yeah, exactly.
We've done a few of those. The next... The next project that we're going to work on here is in November, we're going to do a toy building project here at the camp.
Nice. So I know where this is going.
We're going to set the shop up as a little factory, and people are going to come in and build toys. And we're going to give those toys then to one of the kids' programs somewhere, probably some in Napa, and then some of them will probably go back to San Francisco for Toys for Tots or one of those programs.
Oh, very
There's
cool.
There's the Kiwanians here in Napa who has been just so helpful at doing things up here at the camp. They've been an active participant here at the camp for over 30 years. The horse barn that's down at in the lower part of camp that we work out of, that was a total Kiwanians Club project. They started, raised all the money and came and built that whole barn. The AD cabin down in the lower part of camp between Boys Town and Girls Town, there again, another Kiwanians project, you know, all done with Kiwanians. The ridge behind the Kiva that goes across the creek, another Kiwanians Club project. All kinds of things around camp here they've perpetually been just a huge supporter of. One of the things that Maceo was very excited about, and I was very instrumental in making it happen, we have a brand new amphitheater here at the camp.
Woo-hoo!
That is the Redwood Grove Amphitheater. We ran our first big practice session down there for it being a real amphitheater this year. We're going to have the grand opening for it next summer, but we did a practice session this summer.
We did. A couple, a little practice session.
And for when we ran the music week this summer with Maceo and help me out with the name.
Bill McCann yeah.
from Dancing Dots yep. and different things. For the main concert down there, we had 104 butts on benches, and we had room for more. There was about 160 people here
yes.
for the concert. The benches down there are of my design. Maceo asked me earlier about design. I designed the benches. I decided how they're going to be built. Went out and got the lumber. They're all made out of redwood.
They're comfortable.
And
for benches, they're comfortable. I got a lot of comments on how they're ergonomically. Is that the right word?
Yep.
Correct?
Yep.
Good job.
I did get an A in my chair building class in college.
Okay, so that probably had something to do with it. Nothing worse than sitting for an hour and a half on a bench that's uncomfortable.
Yep. we've taken it upon, each bench has a different theme, and we have about 6 or 7 of them carved, some of them with wildflowers, some of them with mushrooms, some of them with streams, some of them with trees, some of them with buildings that are on the camp property. The very next one that's going to be carved, we call the Predator Bench. It's going to have rattlesnakes and foxes
nice.
And mountain lions and bears and different things on it.
Should we do a shout-out to Delilah?
And so...
Should we do a shout-out to Delilah?
Delilah from RISD, the Rhode Island School of Arts and Design. She's a furniture major. She was my intern for the summer. She was the person who... her and I would sit down and decide what we wanted to put on them. She would design it up, and I have a CNC router, a computer-controlled router, and then the router will carve out the pretty designs.
Super cool stuff.
And then in some of them, then we go back and in some areas do a little bit of hand carving as well to tie some of this stuff together.
Nice.
So the things that are going to happen in the future is we're going to run a sculpture competition down at the Redwood Grove. What the seating that's there now is called Phase 1. Phase 2 is going to be up on the side of the hill above the retaining wall, and different than what we did in the lower part. The lower part we got pretty conventional looking. We have terraces and everything and benches and nice straight rows and on terraces so that it looks like a standard theater setting. Now up on the hillside, we're going to, wherever the lay of the land and wherever the paths will let us, we're going to just use the natural lay of the land. We're going to follow it around. We're going to put some paths in, and then we're just going to strategically place benches
like
so that they will have good views of the stage and the theater.
There are always people that go up to that area to enjoy the show.
Correct.
There are always people that always want to go up a little bit higher and sit on, let's call it the lawn, if you will, yeah, like a regular amphitheater. You have your lower seating underneath the canopy or whatever, and then you have the lawn seating. That's what I would call that area that you're going to make some paths and some benches. And honestly, the sound quality is so good down there that you could be anywhere on that hillside and be able to enjoy not the quality of what's going on. It's an amazing, not only place to see music or be, but to perform as well. And I'm speaking from experience because I got to perform several times down there. It's a really incredible achievement. All of the things that have come together down there, the benches, the woodworking, the area, the stage, it's really cool.
There again, back to the Kiwanians.
Yeah, exactly.
I'm sorry, I've said the wrong name every time. It's the Kiwanis Club.
It's the Kiwanis. Kiwanians.
Kiwanians. Oh, my gosh.
Kiwanians.
Now I'm feeling really old that I confused the two names. I am old.
Kiwanians.
It's the Kiwanians that have helped build all these incredible things here at the camp.
Kiwanians.
Yeah,
so. George has corrected himself. The Rotary's out for now.
Yeah. Well, the Rotary has, you know, the Rotary, they run the Cycle for Sight, see?
Oh, yeah. And okay, so I can see the confusion. That's
yeah,
okay.
Rotary,
there you go.
Cycle for Sight. They raise, you know, somewhere between $35,000 and $40,000 for us every year running Cycle
right,
for Sight.
Right, right. And then the Kiwanians come up and volunteer their time.
Yeah, the Kiwanians come up and volunteer
so
their time.
So we figured that out. That's the beauty of podcasting. We can figure it all out before it's all over.
Yeah. Now make sure you go back and put some little disclaimers in earlier that George has confused the names.
Oh, you know what? I'll use my voice. I'll say Kiwanians, and then I'll edit it every time you say Rotary. I'll edit my voice saying Kiwanians.
There you go.
George, you bring
so
a lot
in
of
the future.
Yeah,
the future,
go ahead.
I want people to come. I want people to enjoy. I want people to learn. I am interested in promoting, you know, blind people into what a lot of people would consider non-blindness kinds of things, because people don't necessarily link blind people and art together, with the exception of music. So a lot of blind people have become pretty good musicians. What's that guy's name? Stevie. I wonder what his last name is. Stevie Wonder. Yeah, there we go.
I wonder.
Anyways, so, you know, I mean, we have some pretty good, you know, Ray Charles.
Sure.
You know,
there's a bunch of them.
There's a huge amount, but we don't hear much about blind artists. And there really are some really good blind. There's a really good up and coming deaf blind artist out of New York City named Emily Gassio, and she happened to be a student of mine for about 9 months, and she is doing really, really well in the sculpture business. And she is going to be one of my artists in residence soon as she gets. She went back to college to get her PhD or doctorate in fine arts. So when she's done with that, we'll get her back out here to do some stuff.
Well, I would say thus far you have been achieving your goal because you bring a lot of joy to a lot of people. I see lots of people, particularly in the teens and the youth, coming back from the wood shop with all their projects, showing me their cars, their inspired video game inspired things that they make, movie inspired things, houses. I've seen a kid make a house that he wanted to build when he was all grown up, a model of the house. It was really cool. I think that was last year. You see these groups of people come in and they are, all they want to do is go to the wood shop and work with you, much like a lot of the campers come and like to do specific things. It's really cool to have that addition of having you and your teaching ability and your teaching skills here at EHC. Is there some longevity in what you're doing here? Do you want to keep staying with us and doing what you're doing? It sounds like you have a lot of plans. Is that,
well,
you're going to pass it on or are you going to stay and hang around?
If you read the Lighthouse Employee Handbook, it says that you have to be here for 6 years to be fully invested. I've almost got 3 years down. That's
okay.
Only three more years.
Yeah, it
and
happens
fast.
And then
I get to have all of their money along with the money that I've saved. So,
okay, so
if
there
I don't
go.
Stay that long, then I give away free money. Geez, I hate giving
no
away
free money,
money
for
so.
Anybody. I yeah. appreciate that way of thinking. Very
so,
cool.
So, and I have some plans. I mean, I want to, like I said, I want to get the artisan residency going. I want to get the pottery slash, you know, ceramics program up and running. I want to see the sculpture program up and running. I want to see our gallery become a part of the Napa Sonoma Valley art scene. Those things are really important to me. So my goal is to stick around for a while and keep hammering at those things.
Keep getting those things going. Right on. Is there anything you want to just say in general to anybody? Any shout outs or anything as we
As long as Linda Fonseca will keep making me spice cookies, I'll stick around.
Linda Fonseca's a legend. That's a good one. I like her spice cookies, too. I like all the cookies Linda makes. I keep stealing them. Okay.
What I do want to say is that one of the things that Lighthouse is working towards that I admire Brian Beshem for trying to implement and trying to get people to understand is that it's okay to fail. And so many people really, really worry about that aspect of their worlds and their lives. And for some reason, George Wurtzel never fell into that, you know, problem about failing. I've always thought that I will try and I will do my best, but I've never worried about. And I have failed at some things. I mean, there's no doubt about that.
Sure.
I mean, and which we all have. But I have never, ever worried about starting into a project and saying, oh, what happens if I fail? I've always started into a project with saying, we're going to do this project. We'll make it work.
The best that we can.
And we'll do the best that we can do, and we'll use the resources that we have. And if we fall short of the goal, back up and reevaluate, see where we can move from there. If nothing else, you just put it into your bucket of things that you've learned the hard way.
That's it.
And try not to make those same mistakes again. So Brian Beshem, in encouraging people at Lighthouse, you know, to go out and try things that haven't been done before. The Holman Prize is a pretty good example of that.
Yep.
How to encourage people to reach out of their comfort zone and try to do something new and different. And I think we'll see that. Some people who do Holman Prize things will do really, really well. I think we're going to see some people who do Holman Prize things in the future. Not all of them are going to succeed. Some of them are going to get halfway through and say, my God, this is a disaster. What do we do now? Bail.
Right.
That's what you do. And then you start over and you do something new. You know, I've gone back to zero a couple times in my life and don't regret that. I mean, it's just what happened. Other people really, really need the security of that 8-to-5 job with the, you know, planned retirement, you know, program at the end, and what they're going to do, you know, later in life. I have never worried about what was going to happen a month from now. I always just did the project that was in hand. And I spent all my life, you know, until coming to, you know, Lighthouse here pretty much, project-oriented. Up until the time that I started working for Camp Tush Mahita, you know, everything that I did, you know, in my self-employed life was project-oriented. It was like having a job interview every week. You would go and you would talk to the person that you wanted to work from, You would present them with what your skills, talents, and abilities were. You would show them how you would apply them to what their project is, and then they would either hire you or not hire you. And I would say that probably any contractor, any, you know, furniture builder, any person along those lines is self-employed. We probably only get 4 to 5% of the things we bid on. That's a, if you look at it that way, that's a pretty much an 80 or 90% failure rate.
Yeah,
you know,
so you're high percentages.
Yeah, I mean, so you're living on 5% of your success rate. So, you know, I guess I accept. I guess if you could say it that way, I accept failure pretty well. You know, if you. Because you can't get everything when you bid jobs. You know, there's
right.
some job, and I've been told point blank by people, "Oh, you didn't get the job because we didn't think you could do it because you're blind," and that's just fine if they didn't. whatever reason I didn't get the job is a reason I didn't get the job. Sometimes because my price was too high.
Right.
I didn't get the job sometimes because they had an established relationship with someone else. I didn't get the job sometimes because. I was blind and they didn't think I could do what they wanted to be done. That's just part of why you didn't get the job, you know? And so you have to learn to live with those kinds of things. I mean, you can't take it personal.
Right. Excellent words of wisdom from Wurzel. I love it. So I, from a personal standpoint, love working at Enchanted Hills Camp. And I love when other people love camp and put that kind of, energy and effort into Enchanted Hills Camp, and you have definitely gone above and beyond to make this place a better place with not only you as a person, but all the physical things that you have done here at camp, the fact that you have all these amazing tools and these great things going on. Definitely worth to podcast, something that we can revert back to and certainly go on to more subject matter in the future and talk about these things as they unfold, your goals and what we're trying to accomplish here at Enchanted Hills Camp. Incredible, I almost said amazing, George. I almost did. An incredible addition to Enchanted Hills Camp.
Don't make me come over there and
No,
you.
Exactly. You do amazing things. Let's just say that.
I think some of my work is amazing.
Okay, perfect. And we, I think all of us would agree, including Brian Bashan and Tony and all the people that work here, that we love having you here at Enchanted Hills Camp and find many of the things that you do. Remarkable, and we're just gonna continue on the path here, the process, the program here, and see what happens next. I look forward to being back here in November with you because I get to run a little music program while you run your woodworking program. Those are always fun, more intimate kinds of situations here because we get to sing a little music and you get do a little woodworking, and then we kind of merge together at meals and have good laughs. I look forward to those things that are happening here in the near future. And with that being said, I look forward to continuing this podcast with that process in mind, not only talking to our campers, but continuing the process by talking to you and finding out what's going to happen next, what it's going to be like next year, and so on and so forth. So thank you so much, George, for taking this time out for two podcasts. This is the first time we've ever had a back-to-back part two. So congratulations on that here at Everything EHC. Thank you, George. What do you think?
Thank you, Mr. Maceo. Appreciate it. Appreciate your time. Appreciate your effort of putting it all together. And come up, enjoy this camp. It is for blind people. It is for you. Come learn something. And even just come up and just enjoy the outdoors. Go sit out. Go sit along the stream. Go sit down at the Redwood Grove Amphitheater. Just get in touch with your inner self and figure out where you want to do and what you want to accomplish in life.
That's all it takes sometimes. Not only are there incredible things happening here at EHC, it's just an incredible place to be physically. I totally agree with those words. Sometimes just shutting it all down and going and finding a nice spot to sit and listen to the wind is amazing here at an Enchanted Hills Camp. So thank you, George. Yeah, okay, so Everything EHC continues. This is Maceo. This was a double shot of George Wurzel. Thank you for listening, and we will be talking to you very, very soon. Maceo out.